Welcome to the California Businesses on the Rise show. I'm Gustavo Tapia, co-founder of Height Digital and owner of Height Digital San Francisco. We impact people's lives by empowering them to reach their goals by growing their authority and helping them network with other business owners. Stick around to the end of the show. We'll reveal how you can be our next guest on one of the fastest growing daily inspirational podcasts.
Thank you guys for tuning in to another amazing episode of California Business on the Rise podcast. This is your favorite podcaster, Romina. And today we actually have another amazing guest that we are going to talk about business growth. What are some big lessons that you'd be able to get from this episode, as well as from Alex Mayahufa, which is the founder of Ideal Wealth Grower. Hey, Axel, how are you today?
I'm good, Romina. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So to give the audience a little bit more information about Ideal Wealth Grower, you guys, it's a creative passive income for residential real estate investment to reach financial independence company. And Axel, give us a little bit background. How did the company even get started? Where did this come about?
Right. Yeah. So basically, as you can maybe tell from my accent, I'm originally from Germany and came over here to the United States 25 years ago with the military, flying fighter jets for the Air Force and stuff like that. And then when I retired from that, I started a consulting business and asked myself, hey, what do you do as a small business owner in the area of some sort of building a retirement fund or something like that? And I looked around because I had heard from people that work for larger companies that they have like 401ks and stuff like that, and came to understand, yeah, that doesn't really exist when you just have a small business. And so I looked around, what could I do? And you have to keep in mind, I started my first consulting business in 2005, which was only 2 years after the big dot-com crash. So stock market investing really didn't look attractive to me. So I looked for alternatives and gotten into real estate. And I also had a little bit of previous experience because with the military, you move around all the time. And most of the time you rent, but every so often you buy something and then you sell it again when you get stationed in a new location, stuff like that. So I found this affinity to real estate and started using that as basically my retirement fund, because I also felt it's very unlikely that the kind of stuff that I do in consulting, I would compare it a little bit more like a doctor's practice or something. Right. And it's not really something where I'm developed a gadget of some kind or a unique service that I could ever sell. So for me, it was always clear I have to do something on my own as the business is developing and growing, so that at some point that I hopefully be able to choose, I can retire or can reduce or something like that. And so I started doing the real estate stuff. And just, you know, like if you and I had been friends a long time already, we would have just chatted somewhere with a glass of wine sitting by the beach with ice cream or something, you know, hey, what are you doing and what's going on and stuff. And in that context, I mentioned whenever that happened in the past that I'm doing these real estate things, and people said, hey, this is really interesting. And I've never heard about this and so forth and so forth. You should put more out of about it because people are probably interested. And I started doing this and then actually formalized it under Idea Wealth Grower. And it became even more relevant. And I really started building a strategy around it, because when we moved from New Mexico, which is where I retired from the military, to the Santa Barbara area here in California, it became very obvious that investing in California real estate is really tough, especially when you don't already have a ton of money. Right. So the strategy that we're actually suggesting at Idea Wealth Grower, and why we're saying, you know, creating a passive income to reach financial freedom, or the what I call the time freedom point, is the part that is at the very beginning of the name of that strategy. And that's called the out of state, because there are places in the Midwest and in the South where you can still find reasonably priced properties where the balance between how much do I pay and how much rent can I collect is good, versus when you're here in California, or if you're in New York or in Seattle or San Francisco. Yes, you can find properties if you can afford them, but nobody is paying you the adequate level of rent. So that's how that all started. And now we're basically having social media channels. We have YouTube. We have all these kind of things, because I have always loved to be an educator. And I hope that I can mentor and help other people to see it's not just for rich people. It's basically something that anybody can do who has the drive and the discipline, and then you can get there, you know.
What would you say have been some of your biggest pushes, though, to push through every obstacle that you may have run through your consulting and your business? Because as we know, entrepreneurship, it's a trendy word, but at the same time, you are going to work more than the regular 9-to-5 job. You're going to, you know, do everything, wear multiple hats. You're going to wear the accounting hat, the operational, the sales, the boss. So what has been some of the biggest pushes for you, some of the biggest inspirations for you to keep going and be thankful also to, you know, why you kept going at the same time?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, one of the biggest things was, for one, the duality of still having the majority, at least initially, the majority of all my work has been and still remains to be in the consulting company and bringing basically a second business up. And the other thing that I learned through the consulting business is that having the traditional employee, the typical W-2 employee, is not just a matter of going through a pretty intense process to find somebody, but it's also, at least by my view, I'm convinced of that by now, is really an expensive thing from a business owner's perspective. And I know there is this balance between, you know, when you employ somebody, you're basically providing a livelihood to somebody else and their family. And I totally get that. But when you look at both, like you said, the bookkeeping side, as well as things like what are all the things that I as the employer have to pay besides what the employee has to pay, from taxes and COBRA and all kinds of different fees and FICA and so forth. So I basically wanted to develop the company in a different way, where I'm using subject matter experts and basically bring them on board like a freelancer, but not just on a project basis, but on a long-term basis, which is kind of somewhat unique, and it's gotten better and more common. But at the time when I started, it was unusual. And I have people that for more than a year in this kind of freelance capacity helped me run Idea Wealth Grower, because as you said, there's no way I could do it all by myself.
So if I'm understanding this correctly, you are going more into the contractor, freelancer, or, you know, the 1099 form type of employee compared right. to a W-2, because you're also picking up more talent to maybe work on a project base or work on a retainer base or however you like it. But you're also selecting, going out of your way and selecting somebody that has a lot more specialty than what a regular 9-to-5 employee is doing. If I'm understanding
the logic exactly. right. Yeah, totally, Romina. You got that perfectly right, and you said that better than I did, actually. But the thing about it is, if you think, for example, Idea Wealth Grower has somebody dedicated to work on social media marketing, right? So we can get engagement with our audience, with our clients, our Idea clients and stuff like that. But in all honesty, we are not anywhere big enough to make that a full-time job. Now, you could argue, could have a half-time or part-time job, but it made more sense to have somebody who really developed expertise in this and do that for like 3 hours a day every day, mm-hmm. right? And that's really, even for a part-time job, that the whole effort is not different whether you do a part-time or a full-time job to all the other things besides the actual work, right? And so we do this for social media marketing. And I mean, you have probably, or somebody on your team has seen my favorite girl, Nadine, who is doing everything to do with podcasts and blog posts and things. I write the article. She makes sure that it goes to the website. Our recording will go to the website and stuff. Right. But again, this is not even a half-time job. This is, again, something like 3 to 4 hours a day. But that's really, she is so organized and so meticulous and stuff like that, right? So those specialties, just like you said, having them on a limited time basis, and really helping somebody out that way. And, you know, they're young folks, they're in the process of building their family, and they're really craving that diversity. And I'm not even telling them exactly when those 3 or 4 hours have to be. Mm-hmm. All I want to see is that the work gets done and we check in, you know, whenever there is something like in need of help, or otherwise we have our weekly meeting, and it has really gotten into a great rhythm. And I love this model, you know.
Absolutely. And something Something that I would love to add to that as well is because I'm working with, you know, having my own team and working with different contractors or being hired as a contractor. Another great benefit from this to the young entrepreneurs out there or consultants that maybe are looking for that part-time or just that one-time expertise or consulting, you also have to think a W-2 employee, like a full-time employee, for instance, is going to be only one business in one genre. Whenever you're working with a contractor or a freelancer, they've done multiple projects and it's getting all the knowledge and multiplying it. So you would also get a lot more for your time and a lot more productivity long-term as well. So I'm glad the conversation did bring this up a little bit because I also feel like freelancers or contractors don't get as much credit as they should because they bring a lot more to the table often than what a normal W-2 employee might bring as a secretary, for instance, or somebody else like of that nature of job.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, one thing that is oftentimes, I believe, underestimated is, so if you take this example and say, okay, it's 3 hours for ID Wealth Grower and 3 hours for company two and 3 hours for company three, if somebody wants to work nine hours a day. Well, what has happened quite a few times in my practice with ID Wealth Grower is that one of my experts basically said, hey, with one of my other clients, we tried this and this worked pretty well. Maybe we want to adjust our approach a little bit in that direction, like for the videos to change the descriptions a little bit, or should we number the videos rather than just have them posted with the title and stuff? Those kind of things where they are by their exposure to other circumstances that are not completely different. Right. I mean, if you're doing a certain job, you wouldn't do typically not totally unrelated other job. So in this case, they're using their expertise in three different ways for slightly different purposes. And there is what I call cross-pollination. Right. Yep. Like they learn what works with one thing. And I always encourage them. And the same, by the way, the other way around. If we do something that works well, I don't see this as like a business secret. If we have figured out a way how we can get more engagement with people on Instagram or stuff, why not allow other people to benefit from that too, right? So
yes,
that is something that you rarely see. If somebody's a full-time W-2 employee, they're already so occupied, they're not going to take another job in the same industry and work another 5 hours a day for that, you know.
That's very true. Yeah, the turnaround, whenever you share best using common practices and best, you know, pro tips, it's much quicker. And of course, the productivity, the ROI is going to go higher, much faster than going through multiple loops. Now, let me ask you this. How has COVID affected your business? And did you have to pivot your business through COVID timeframe? Because we're still going through it. But when it first attacked real estate, of course, it's also always, you know, one of the first industries that get attacked or get affected by any economical changes. How did your business change with everything?
Well, there were a couple of interesting twists, I would say. The first thing was that I had the impression it was a little bit like frozen in place, right? This, you know, when you talk about fight or flight, there is this moment just before the decision is made, am I going to fight or am I going to run away? Where that decision process is happening. And it felt to me like between March and like June last year, everything was new, we shutting down, the catastrophe, world is ending kind of thing. And everybody was into, so what do I do now, right? Like, am I run away?
Yeah, every day it's a new, different news. So you're just like, I don't know what to believe.
Yeah. And when it came to things like real estate related, which is, you know, do I continue to do my investments? Do I even, you know, venture to put money, even if I had a process and I didn't lose my job and I put 10% of my money aside in my accumulation account and I still keep doing this, but would I spend it on a real estate investing when the world is ending, so to speak? So there was this kind of frozen in place moment, I would say, for about 3 months, where my wife oftentimes, when she listened to calls that I had and stuff like that, she said, are you doing coaching? And I said, no, that was just a customer call. It wasn't really a coaching or a mentoring session or a counseling session or stuff, even though I'm not a counselor, but I do a lot of coaching and mentoring naturally. And she said, that sounded like somebody needed more like a shoulder to cry on than really talking about investing or stuff. It was just this, you know, everybody was, I would call it, disoriented a little bit. You know, and I try to basically convey how does all what we see and what happens to us affect the real estate market. Now, after that, what's interesting is a lot of people realized from the investor side, which I'm mainly engaging, that there is an awesome opportunity growing. And anybody who has recently looked into the news would probably now, kind of like a year later, agree with that. The opportunity that more and more people who used to live in condos and apartments and stuff like that have basically two reasons to be more interested in what we are actually recommending is like residential real estate, mainly single family homes. And that number one reason is this whole thing about social distancing and having your own place and having your own ability and being with your family and your kids at home and stuff like that. That is desirable to have a residence. Now, the other thing is that more and more of the people who retained their jobs, and there were more than sometimes the media, I believe, lets us to believe, those people oftentimes, vast majority of people were told you can work or should work from home. Well, and then you find these situations, you know, I emptied a closet and made that my Zoom room, right? Or I found a corner in my bedroom where I can, you know, sit and have my meetings. Well, that's really not a long-term solution. The really longer-term solution is to say, okay, I move with my family in a house that has a room that I can dedicate as an office, or maybe even two if my husband or wife also need a room like that. And then that work from home also brings the opportunity to say, well, do I really need to be that close? Like we said when we started our conversation, do I really need to be this close to my employer? And I think that's still a little bit up in the air. So I think a lot of there are some brave people that we're working with who say, I have made the decision. I move, for example, from San Francisco to Oregon because it's so much cheaper. I can get a 3,000 square foot house for what was a tiny apartment in San Francisco. And if my employer says I need to come in every once in a while, I'm willing to take that drive or that flight. But for the most part, I got this huge house. My husband and I have an office now, and the kids have a place now. That is still probably too expensive as an investment property. But the concept to say who would be our potential tenants in the properties that we invest in, that pool has massively increased. Now, on the flip side, as we see with everything, houses got more expensive because now that all this demand is there, it's not just demand for us from an investment perspective that people want to rent our properties, but people in general want to be getting into houses. And what's been forgotten is every year there is a new cohort of people joining the market who have never been in a house or never owned an apartment or never owned a condo or stuff like that. And when you close everything down for like a year and a half, however many hundreds or thousands of people that is, they come all together with the new ones. So the 2020 people and the 2021 people are now the new ones, as I call them, looking for places together with all the other people that would rent. Yeah. First-time buyers or people who want to upgrade from, okay, I may have had a small house as a starter and now I'm building a family and I want to get into something a little bigger. And so all these kind of circumstances became obvious, and I basically made it part of my mission to say, I want to get across that this investment side that we are working in, where we're enabling people like you, Romina, and anybody else listening to realize you need somewhere between $15,000 and $20,000 to start and buy your first investment property. And then you can go from there and figure out how many of those do I need to reach my time freedom point, which is actually what Ideal Wealth Grower is helping you to do, right? And so that hasn't really changed. And that's why I always preach, if I bought a house for $90,000 in 2019 and I got $900 rent, that's the performance ratio we want. Well, admittedly, that same house now might cost $110,000 mm-hmm. in the Midwest. But as long as I still can get $1,100 rent, I'm still good because the ratio is the same. And when there's a lot of demand for people who want to move into houses, well, they're willing to pay more rent compared to 2 years ago, right? So we are looking for mainly making people aware and your listeners aware that you want to find that ratio. And admittedly, there were many more available in 2018 and 19 than now, because the high demand, you know, has taken a lot of the regular opportunities off the market. But that doesn't mean they don't exist anymore. And I really want to encourage everybody who contacts us and your listeners to say, don't think just because things have changed a little bit that you are somehow now left out or left behind. You're not. It's really a matter of, can you find a reasonable way to put a little bit aside to reach this 15 to 20,000 and then every so often, every year or every other year to get add to it? And the younger you start, the sooner you will done. And then you just lean back and say, okay, my passive income is coming in every month. And I have a choice if I want to do a job or not.
Absolutely. Now, one of my final questions before we jump to the final one, but I also want to ask this one, because often to make that very first step, that's the most intimidating step and that's the scariest step. So for somebody, maybe they're just always thought about real estate investment, or maybe they listen to this podcast, they're like, okay, let me actually look into it. What would be 3 to 4 small pieces of advice you can give to somebody to make that first step or get that first knowledge and that first education for them to move to that direction and maybe take those emotions out of it and start just using logic instead? Because, you know, that's a whole nother thing too. But what would be some advices that you can give to those individuals?
Yeah, so what I would say, our strategy has on one end or on the beginning, it's called out of state. The mm-hmm. next term that we're using is turnkey. And so the issue is you oftentimes, unless you're lucky to live in an area where houses are reasonably affordable and you can basically do investments right where you are, you can visit the property on a regular basis, you might even consider managing it yourself. But that's really rare. So most people are some distance away from the juicy places where these more affordable properties are still available in secondary markets. And that's why this word turnkey is so important, because there are not very many, but there are companies that we work with, and I'm always happy to refer our clients to these companies, because that's where I buy my properties too. These turnkey companies, and what's special about them is they find what I call the ugly duckling in a good neighborhood. They renovate everything, like new bathrooms, new kitchens, electric, plumbing, roof, windows, doors. Everything is freshly renovated. Then they renovate it in a way so that the sales price is at a level that is reasonable for that neighborhood. So when you get an appraiser, the appraiser says, yes, this house is worth the $100,000, $105,000, $110,000, $115,000 that the turnkey provider will sell. And here comes the really most important part, is that same company that found it, renovated and sold it to you needs to be the one that also manages it when you actually become the owner. Meaning, like, they find the tenant, they collect the rent, they are there to fix it when something breaks. And when you think about it, that's so important, because the psychology is different. When you know you're building something, you're fixing something up, and then you're selling it to somebody, and they can come back any day and say, hey, Romina, you made this for me and it somehow doesn't work. Can you help me out? It's a different dynamic than you building something or creating something, you sell it and you never see it again in your life. So that's why I say the important thing is they don't just need to find it, renovate it, sell it to you. They also need to manage it for you. And then you build a relationship. And that's why we only work with 3 of those companies in 3 different markets, because you don't really need that many. And it's also kind of laborious if you have to develop tons of different relationships, you know, and maintain them and so forth. So it doesn't take a lot of different ones. It just takes a few good ones.
Perfect. Axel, I love this conversation. I wish we could go further, because we can definitely get into more business, you know, oriented questions. And I know we talked a little bit more offline, but we are coming to the end of the episode. I did want to pass on the mic to you, though, to go ahead and give the audience the links or where can they definitely connect with you, and if they definitely want to reach out and maybe start learning and start, you know, they need a coach or they need to make those first initial steps towards real estate world. Where do they get in touch with you?
Yeah, the first thing is go to idealwealthgrower.com. If you put in Ideal Wealth Grower in Google, you find us on Instagram, you find our YouTube channel. And if you want to get in touch directly with me, just send me an email at axel@idealwealthgrower.com.
Absolutely. And you guys should definitely check out the YouTube channel as well. It has some very well put out videos. I was actually just looking at them yesterday too, and I learned a lot just by looking at the videos. So make sure to connect with Axel. And as far as the podcast go, you guys, thank you so much again for tuning into California Business on the Rise podcast. Go ahead and hit the subscribe button wherever you are listening to this podcast from, wherever you get your podcast juice from. If it is Apple Podcasts, give us a 5-star review and a short comment. Tell us how much you enjoyed the episode. Your favorite podcaster, Romina, is out for now. Bye until the next episode, everybody.
Bye.
Hey, it's Gustavo here. Thank you so much for listening to California Businesses on the Rise. If you're a business owner who would like to be on this program, please visit hypedigital.com/podcast california.ca/apply. If you got something out of this interview, would you please share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and post it on the main social media platform you use. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them and let them know about the show and include the hashtag California Businesses on the Rise. We are regularly putting out new episodes. To make sure you don't miss any, go ahead and subscribe. Any likes, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to hypedigital.com/San-Francisco or follow me on LinkedIn. Thanks for listening. We look forward to seeing you again.